Welcome to the Diary of a Sales Expert podcast. My name's James White, and I'm on a mission to help business owners and sales professionals all over the world get incredible sales results. So thanks for listening, and let's get started.
Welcome to another edition of a Diary of a Sales Expert podcast. As you all know, I love to have guests on the podcast who are experienced and veterans and have huge amounts of knowledge and experience in relation to sales, and so they can share their story and their wisdom and their insights. And I'm really grateful that I've got a fantastic gentleman called Glenn Poulos, who's joined me this evening, all the way from Toronto in Canada. Glenn is the GM of Gap Wireless. He's been a man that's been in sales for, and I'll tell you in a minute, as long as we could all as we could remember. But has written some fantastic book and has some amazing resources on sales and selling. So, real pleasure and honour for me to interview Glenn Poulos. Welcome to the podcast, Glenn.
Thanks, James. Great to be here. Thanks for the introduction as well.
So look, but obviously I've done a bit of an introduction to you, but sure. Tell everyone a little bit about you've got a big senior role right now, but you love sales, right? And you've been doing sales for a long period of time. So give us a bit of the cap story of Glenn.
Yeah. So yeah, except for a couple of years out of college as a federal servant, civil servant working for the Environment Canada, the Weather Service, which they booted me out of for working too hard, if you can believe it. And my boss said, go get a job in sales. I've been in sales pretty much my whole life, and sales management. And I've had the joy of running a couple of companies that I was able to sell. I've been in sales since about 85, and I've kind of always been in this world of face-to-face selling, kind of like the products that I'm involved in they're akin to things that people want to look at before they purchase. So, and mainly in relation to communications, wireless, telecom, and, in 1991, when I quit my first sales job to open my first company, I had approached the owner about going after this newfangled technology called the cell phone, right? And he told me, oh, that's never going to work. Not that the cell phone wouldn't work, but that the business idea wouldn't work, right? And I ended up quitting my job. And I've been pretty much working in my companies ever since, right? And obviously, I haven't been carrying a bag every day of every year, but right now, I after selling my company after 15 years, I rolled into the private equity, and they asked me to pivot from being general manager to taking on the North American sales role, senior sales role. And so, and it was like sort of like put your money back where your mouth used to be, right? Kind of thing, you know. And read your own book and follow your own rules. So I'm actually, I'm traveling every week now, visiting customers and and trying to talk the talk, walk the walk, right? So it's been fun and interesting in the last 6 months for sure, as I've made that pivot. And I can give you some of the highlights and lowlights of those last 35 years as we go.
We'll talk through a number of those, but first question: what actually got you into sales? You mentioned that you'd been since you left college, but what made you leave that government job and go into sales? What was the sort of hook or driver for you?
Yeah, so I will tell you that, and then I'll just tell you what got me to quit the sales job and start my own sales company, right, as well, which I think both are important. So my boss at the government was one of these military guys that got his pension, and then he got another job with the government, and he was double dipping, right? And so he was getting paid his full pension from the army, and he was a federal civil servant building up another pension with Environment Canada. And he was really smart guy, and he pulled me aside. He said, dude, you're in the wrong career. He said, like, you should be in sales. Like, and he told me this rule. He said, money doesn't flow out of a toolbox, it flows out of the end of a pen. And he said, you need to put your toolbox down, pick up a pen, and go learn how to sell stuff. And so I actually just took him at his word. I was, in my early mid-20s, and I didn't give it a lot of complicated thought. And I just started looking for sales jobs. And, when I got one, I quit the government, and I went and picked up a bag and started selling. And then 5 years later, I realized that the real magic in selling was the leverage that you could get in selling, and that, by owning the company and working with other salespeople on your team, you could create a more leveraged approach where you didn't have to make every sales call yourself, right? And
And when in those early days, obviously that boss was an inspiration. But you know, this is, you know, I guess you said you started in 85, so we're talking about 1986 or 87. Yeah. Who were the? Was there anyone particularly that you sort of learned from, or were mentored by, or that you got trained by in those early years?
So yeah, there were four owners of that sales company. It was just a small sales firm, and four guys were actually each owner like 25%, and. And there was one fellow I didn't work with too much, but the other three guys were like consummate sales experts. Like these guys were just massively good peddlers. And I sucked up every piece of, like, that's where I really, it wasn't like I got it from, you know, Zig Ziglar or something. Obviously, I read all those books and everything, but it was really just having these guys help me out on coming on sales calls. And I have all these like factors in the book where I have a name, right? You know, where I name the rule after people. And these are people that I work with. And, you know, and I did actually change the names in the book to protect the guilty. But nonetheless, the, you know, these guys became my mentors for 5-6 years. And they taught me a lot of the basics, which I still apply today, right? And so those were my true mentors. And when I think of mentors in sales, I go all the way back to 85 and the guys that owned that company. And as a matter of fact, one of those guys, believe it or not, you know, is in an hour from now is coming to visit me here in my office. We're going out. We're going to have a little just a chat, and then we're going to go out for dinner a little bit later. And so after all these years, I'm still, you know, very close to these guys, right? So.
Fantastic. And what, you know, was there anything, obviously they taught you a lot, and we'll talk through a lot of the, you know, we've got some, you know, you've got your book, and we'll talk about your pitch outline as well. Yeah. Was there anything in particular that stood out from any of their teachings over time that's always stuck with you since then?
Yeah. Well, one of the, one of their sort of tenets, which I gave a cute name for the book, right, which was, you know, never fax the facts, never ship the shit, right? Which was basically always do your selling in front of the customer, because everything else is marketing, right? And that that's where the true selling occurs, at least in the business that I grew up in. And you want to be in front of the customer as much as possible, right? So when the customer wants a quote, drop the quote off, right? If he wants to see the product, deliver the product, set it up, you know, figure out how long he needs it for and give it to him for half that amount of time. Show up then, you know, say 3 days later, pull the product right when he's getting good use of it, so they taught me all sorts of little rules and tricks like that, right? But really it was, and I see this so much today coming out of the pandemic, people just want to sit in their cockpit and they want to do it all from, let me set up a Zoom call. We'll do it on Teams. And I got a virtual, you know, presentation for you. And you just can't get someone's attention, especially, you know, if you're selling high ticket items that have a tactile, you know, like I sold high tech equipment. That's what I sold, right? And so it was important for us to get that stuff in front of customers and get them using it and loving it, right? So that was one of the things, was go, you know, if you have a sales call, make it face to face. So
it's funny, then, and it's interesting, because I talk to, you know, and obviously the world has changed a lot from 85, like you say, the pandemic has changed. But one of the key things around that that's interesting is that mentoring process, right? And that ability to go and support you with those sales calls, those daily sales deals initially. One of the things that, you know, I'm sure we'll get onto the subject of sales management, I think is a little bit lost a bit now for a lot of organizations, is that element to support and mentor teams, right? You know, a lot of sales organizations bring people in. It's like, there you go, on you go, do your best. And it's like, well, how are they supposed to be mentored if they don't know? Yeah. How are they supposed to be given education? And when you joined your first company, were you given, how was it for you when you joined that first company as a salesman? Was it a case of get on with it, Glenn, or did anyone give you a training program? Or how did it work?
Yeah. So for the first part, it was just like, it was basically for about the first 3 months or whatever, they wouldn't unleash me on the wild, right? It was basically learn the products. And I mean, I'll explain, I learned a valuable lesson in that time, but which I'll explain in a second. But I mean, I basically was sort of eyes down every day at the office, reading brochures and trying to learn the products. And we represent products from around the world in Canada, and we were technical engineers selling these products, right? And so there were many, many vendors. You know, we had like 40 vendors, and every one of them had 5 or 10 products. I mean, we're talking 500 products I needed to learn, right? And I realized that, you know, it was almost impossible in the way that they had presented it to me. And after about the 3 months, sort of came to the point where they said, hey, where's the territory we could send this kid that even if he screwed it up, we wouldn't care, right? So they sent me, you know, 3.5 hours west of Toronto, you know, to this town called Windsor, which is an automotive town across from Detroit in Michigan, right? It's Detroit and Windsor. And I mean, it wasn't a big market for that, our company, right? And so, they said, look, let's send them out there and see what happens, right? And they did not actually mentor me at all. I was able to get some appointments. I had some meetings to go to. And one of my rules from the book, I had something in my hand, something in my mind, you know, and I went to visit Ford Electronics. I went to visit the University of Windsor, and I came back with deals and opportunities from every one of them, right? And one of those deals ended up parlaying into a multi-million dollar deal for the company. And it's really an area of like pride for me that on my first sales call, first day of calls, I came up with an opportunity that netted the company millions in sales because they were able to sign a new vendor and sell that to multiple universities. And they really cashed in on it. Right. But once they said, oh, this guy can go places and do damage and don't have to go back and say sorry, they started bringing me closer and closer to the GTA, to the Toronto area, right? To the greater Toronto area. And that's when they started then buddying up with me to go visit bigger customers. And that's when I started seeing how they were doing it and, you know, how they did demos and how they, you know, how they got in the door, how they conducted themselves when they arrived, what they did while they were there. And, you know, and a lot of those lessons became things that I wrote down and then parlayed into the book that I published, right? And
we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but just can you remember, you know, that, I mean, one of the things that, you know, you've identified there, and I always talk to people in sales and business situations, you've got to take action, right? You've got to be on the front foot. You've got to, you know, you can't, you know, the book called Never Sit in the Lobby, but you can't take action if you don't get into the lobby, right? If you don't get into the building, if you don't get knocking, you know, if you don't do something, whether it's face to face or whether you're doing, you know, on the phone or whatever, you have to take action. And can you remember those first?
Yeah, like one of the things, like for instance, the one trick that I learned from them, which I use to this day, which is like a lot of people are like, oh, I need Monday in the office so I can set up all my calls for the week, right? But when I do it, when I'm in front of customers, I'm already booking the next call while I'm there at that time. Like if I go to someone tomorrow, it might, and I mean, you gotta understand, maybe the next call needs to be in a week, or maybe it needs to be in 6 weeks or 9 weeks or whatever, right? But I'm actually leaving with the appointment already set. So whether it's, say, the following Thursday or whatever, I already know Thursday afternoon I'm back at that same customer. And while I'm there in the building, I'm going to try to say to Bob and Jack, like, hey, I'm back next Thursday. You know, can I get 15 minutes on your schedule? And they're like, yeah, usually they say, yeah, no problem. Now I got 3 meetings set up at that customer. I know I'm good for like 2 hours, and that Thursday afternoon's done, right? And so like that's a huge trick that they taught me, that, you know, you don't just do what you got to do, go back to the office and then reschedule the next appointment, like, because you got to get them on the phone and, you know, so... Yeah,
it's a great point. And it's something I teach when I, you know, work with, you know, businesses about. It's one of my, you know, golden rules about a lead. A lead's not a lead unless it's got a next action. And actually, if the next action is a meeting or a call or whatever, they can get that booked in. And if it's not in someone's diary and it isn't, and they haven't got, then the chance are it's not going to happen, right? So it's fantastic advice. And if there's one snippet that people can even take from this, don't leave a meeting without that. But it is an interesting thing for you on that point, because a few people have said to me, well, what happens if the buyer doesn't want to schedule that meeting, or they don't want to arrange that conversation? Well, what did you do at those sort of times? Or what would you do right now if someone said to you, oh, Glenn, I'll never think about it and come back to you, or I don't want to do that right now? I mean, how do you normally respond to those sort of things?
Yeah, so, I mean, everything had a contextual sort of basis to it, right? So, I mean, for instance, like some of it would boil down to like little tricks and things, right? Like, for instance, let's say I was there and I did a demo and the guy, maybe he was using the technique of like, I'm just going to ask him for a quote and try to get rid of him, right? Like, oh, that's interesting. Thanks for coming. Hey, could you send me a quote? And I'm like, sure, no problem. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be back here on Tuesday. I've got some other people I'm going to be seeing. can I drop it off to you? And he's like, oh, I'm really busy. And I'm like, okay, meaning, you know, according to what you're saying, like the guy's trying to get rid of me or whatever, right? And so I'm like, that's no problem. I said, you know, why don't I just drop it off in the lobby for you? And he's like, okay, yeah, I'm really busy, but you can drop it off in the lobby, right? So then next Tuesday rolls around. Of course, while I was leaving there, I made appointments to see Bob and Jack. So we got other reasons to be there. But I show up and Sally's at the desk and I'm like, hey, Sally, I'm here to see Bob. And they're like, well, is he expecting you? I'm like, well, yeah, he asked for a quote. And she's like, oh, okay. And she says, Sally calls Jack or Bob and says, hey, Bob, you know, Glenn's in the lobby. He's got that quote you wanted. And he forgot that he told me that he was too busy. And he comes down to the lobby, right? And so that's how one of the ways I do it, right? And I mean, now if somebody genuinely doesn't have a need or or a want or and there's really not a fulfilling reason for me to come back and see the guy at that particular moment, then I'm not going to like bully my way in to waste time, right? And so one of my rules is I'd rather be last than second, right? And so the moment I realize that I have no deal or I'm losing a deal, I immediately stop all effort. I don't spend any more time on it, right? And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's a really interesting point. And I think it's, again, it's something it mirrors in, you know, a lot of things that I talk to my customers about. But actually identifying that is difficult sometimes for customers, for buyers, for especially people that are, you know, maybe a bit, you know, they're not as advanced in their career or not as much experience. What did you do to know that, you know, what did you, you know, how did you know that those buyers were in that point where you think, no, this isn't worth carrying on, this isn't going anywhere? What did you do? Was that just a combination of skills and experience over time, or?
Yeah, a little bit. But I mean, that's one of the things, like, well, people are like, well, they just email quotes and they just, you know, ship the units in for evaluation and then ship them back. And, you know, and they think that they're leveraging time and technology when really they're just unselling themselves, right? Because, you know, let's say that, you know, there's an instrument or whatever that they want to buy from us and I drop it off and I set it up. But when I look around, I realize that they have no other products from my manufacturer and my number one competitor is everywhere, right? Then I already know that I'm starting at a position of weakness and I may be there just to keep that company honest, right? And so I'll ask straight out. I'll say, well, I notice, you know, you've got, you know, tons of Acme here. What's the chances of you guys going away from Acme to, you know, to our system, you know, for this opportunity? Oh, well, and then maybe you can tell they're bullshitting you right away, right? Like, and then you realize I already know that I'm dead, right? Now, I probably can't pull it right at that second, but then I'll say, well, okay, why don't I leave it? I'm back here tomorrow or Monday, but I'm not going to leave it for 2 weeks for them to have it sit there and do nothing, right? And that's just one of many like scenarios where I know I'm losing, right? And the other thing is like, and I talk about it in the book or whatever, you know, shameless plugs, but I mean, about starting at the appropriate level in all of your interactions with companies, right? So let's say you're selling something that costs $100,000. You could pretty much guarantee yourself that the boss, the big boss, is signing off on it. You know what I mean? Unless it's a huge company, the president or CEO is signing off on it, right? So you want to be, you know, creative in your approach, but in such a way that you get punted down the food chain, not up. And so start with the CEO. And I have a great little skit that I do about the tow motor salesman, the forklift guy that sells forklifts. It starts with the CEO. And, you know, and by the end of it, he's got the CEO coming down to test drive the forklift because he knows he's going to be signing off on it. Right. And I can then go at any point in the food chain and check in to find out if I'm losing. Right.
It's such a powerful point. I use the phrase sell to those that create budgets, not those that have them.
Yeah.
It's sort of like about being able to go in at that executive. But a lot of people in sales are afraid of that, isn't it? What do you think makes them so afraid of selling at the C-suite?
Yeah, I think it's just that. They're just afraid. Like, I just think it's just fear, right? But, and I mean, obviously, we've all heard the same things. We all put our pants on one leg at a time and stuff like that. And I mean, the whole thing is, like, your goal is not to sell to the CEO. Your goal is to have the CEO act all, like, all put off and say, Glenn, I got to get involved in the purchase of tow motors. Like, my vice president of logistics and warehousing is Bob, and you should talk to him, right? And I mean, because he's not going to know Bob's eons three levels down in the warehouse. He's going to give me the VP's name, right? I'm going to call the VP and I say, look, I just had a great chat with Jack, the CEO, and he said, you know, we really got to get these tow motors in for evaluation. I don't look at tow motors. I'm a VP. My director of warehousing and logistics is Sam. And, you know, call Sam. Sam's like, I don't have time for tow motor evaluations. My warehouse manager is Paul. Call Paul. And Paul's like, I don't have time for this. You know, call Gary. He's the one who's the shop foreman. He's the one that picks all the tow motors. And you got a tough road ahead because, you know, we're a Toyota house, right? You know, through and through, right? And so all the way down, I'm like, hey, I just talked to Jack. He told me, I just talked to Sam. I just talked to Gary. I just talked to Paul, you know, and by the time I get to the shop foreman, this guy realizes I know every single person in the food chain and he pays attention. And at the appropriate moments, I call the guys and I say, look, I know you're busy. I know, you know, like this is, but you know, you got to come and check this thing out. Like we're driving circles around those Toyotas. You know, we use 20% less energy. You know, we can save you time, money, space, and turning radius. You want to check it out, right? And at any point, I can call any one of them and say, look, I know you guys are a Toyota shop. What are the chances I'm going to get this deal? And one of them's going to say, you know what, Glenn? We're a Toyota shop. You're not getting the deal. And that second, I pull the unit and I'm gone and I never go back, right? And I go to the next shop where Toyota doesn't have time because they're too busy buying donuts for the guys at that place. And they can't be in two places at one time. And I go to the next place and I try to become the Toyota of that place, right? And
it's a really interesting point you mentioned about just about having that strategy about going after organizations that are, you know, that are very similar. And it's I was going to say to you, when you've had your most successful sales campaigns or plans, have there been two or three things that have been sort of paramount into the success of those campaigns? And when you've been, you know, implementing them with teams and other, you know, is there anything in particular that's that, you know, whereas choosing a target segment or being able to identify a set of, you know, companies or drive it in on a specific, you know, desire or problem, is there anything in particular that's really served you well in those plans?
Well, so yeah, there's a few things. I mean, one is the Pareto principle of 80-20, right? And also, you know, in addition to where I said, you know, I'd rather be last than second, right? The moment I feel that I'm going to become in second, I quit and become last and move on. But also, I caution young salespeople and at any age really, that you need to self-reflect on what, like once you start in sales, there's going to be a zero moment, right? Where I'm not a salesman, now I'm a salesman, right? Okay, so now I'm a salesman day one, right? Within the first 90 days, you want to figure out the company I work for, are they any good? Where do they sit in the pecking order? And if they're not one or two, quit. Go and work for number one or two. Because number one's getting 80% of the business. Number two is getting 80% of the what's left. And number three and four, they're getting 80% of 4%. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? They're battling 4% of the business. And so why would you want to waste your life working for number three? There's no payback. Makes no sense. Quit. Go get a better job at a better company where you can learn how to sell a product that people want to buy, right? And I mean, because you can only live today. So I don't want to sell the C brand because it's like got 20% more memory or whatever. And 1/100th of the people will say, yeah, memory is really important. I'll take the C brand over the A and the B brand that everybody knows and loves, right? And so those are some things that I apply. The other thing is like on my whole 80-20, 20-80, 80-20, like this whole thing, it just keeps, I keep feeding on itself is that the, you know, a lot of times if you do things like sell things to companies, you often are going for the, if you're the number one brand, you're calling on the big guy selling your big end product and wrapped around that company are feeder companies that serve that company in many ways and may also need your products in some way. Right? Like just a quick example, like let's say it's Ford, you know, or GM or something wrapped around Ford and GM, there's 1,000 parts manufacturers and companies, right? And I mean, let's say you sell parts polishing equipment or whatever. And, you know, the big Fujitsu is the big maker of, you know, they sell to Ford directly. But I mean, you know, you sell Yokogawa or whatever, and there's 100 companies that need to polish parts before they go to GM, right? And so when you, obviously you're going to call on GM to try to sell your unit, but you got to realize once you realize you're going to lose, leave, but go to all the companies around it because they're not, because trust me, when it's 4 o'clock and the guy who calls on GM from Fujitsu and just got another $12 million order, you think he's really going to go call on B's and C customers in the area? No, no. And so, you know, so figure out where you fit in the pecking order and become the, you know, a really, you know, good servant of those customers, right?
It's a great point, and it goes back. I always talk about, you know, knowing where you're a fit, okay? And sometimes you're not a fit in certain areas, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you're not, you know, your people try and, you know, small businesses try and do business with, you know, multinationals or whatever else. I'm like, you're not a fit. You're not going to go and win business in a place where, you know, you've not got the supply chain or the wherewithal or the legals or whatever to go and deliver. Go where you're good and go and find a sweet spot that you could build and then build. And once you build that sweet, you know, to your point, when you were sent off to Windsor, you were able to build something and then come back and then build from there. And it's about having that starting base, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know if, yeah, sales, you know, we're proud to be salespeople, and I wear the badge of a salesman as a badge of honor. But many business owners, I work with a lot of business owners, feel uncomfortable about sales, or even a lot of maybe people coming into the industry feel uncomfortable about sales. Well, is there anything in particular that you think from your experience of working with businesses or from, you know, maybe people that are new to it, what is it that puts them off selling?
Well, I don't know, but usually my reaction to that is, I said, well, I could stop selling, but you wouldn't have a job, right? Like, because nothing happens back at home base until I go out and sell something. So yeah. You can look down and cast aspersions on my career as much as you want, but I'm the heartbeat of business.
I make the tills ring. I would say I make the tills ring.
Exactly. Yeah. But nothing happens until something gets sold, right? And so, yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to the days of people think of, you know, encyclopedia salesmen, Kirby vacuum cleaner guys banging on doors, getting rejected, encyclopedias, you know, snake oil salesmen from the 1800s, or, you know, I think it's like silly, like stereotypes like that, which are obviously based in some, you know, fact and truth to them or whatever. But I mean, you know, a truly professional salesperson for a truly, you know, good quality company or something is something of very high value. Right. And I mean, when you work for selling some of these products for some of these companies and you see, you know, their people, or you realize that these are some of these people are of the highest caliber, right? And so, you know, yeah, there's some, you know, let's say questionable ethics of people out there, but I mean, that's not the world we're catering to, right? I mean, we're calling owners of businesses and, you know, senior managers and directors and VPs and I mean, and our time is just as valuable as theirs, right? And I talk about a lot about that as well in the book, about to value your own self and your own time. You know,
it's a great point you made. Again, it's something that backs a lot of what I talk about. I talk to people about sales isn't subservience. Yeah, people think sales is like they're going to bow down at the altar of the CEO or the C-suite. It's like, no. Their time is just as important as yours. They get the toilet in the same place and they eat food in the same way. Guess what? You're exactly the same as them because you've got 24 hours in the day in the same way as they have.
Exactly. Right? Yeah,
it's that different. We people beat themselves up before they start, and it's one of my big passions is trying to change that as well. But if someone said to you, describe your sales approach in one sentence, or if someone said to you, yeah, Glenn, and, you know,
yeah,
if you were, you're able to, you know, obviously the book, and we're going to talk about the book in a moment that people can get access to. But you know, is there a single sort of, you know, sort of sentence or approach that you use or think about about selling?
So, whenever anyone would ask me that, I would always answer it the same way, which is that my goal, if I can talk about it in that way, is to show people how to get, act, and stay in front of their customers and be a pleasure to do business with always, right? And I mean, that's a mouthful, right? But obviously break it down, you know, how to get in front of them, stay in front of them, act in front of them. But the most important part is the ending part, and how to be a pleasure to do business with always. And so what I'm saying is when you lose, you must still be a pleasure to do business with, right? Because you want to get invited back on the next RFP or the next, opportunity that's coming from that.
Let's say the deal with the current provider goes wrong, right? It might go wrong. They can't get pricing organized.
Exactly.
It's a great point, and I've seen salespeople that, you know, sort of stick their V's up at people and sort of stuff you around their ass. And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, you're killing, you know, I always end with love, right? Say thanks very much. We wish you well. And before you know it, they've come back and said, hey, that supply didn't work out.
Yeah, and I've had people say, like, we love dealing with you, Glenn, and you're a pleasure to do business with, but I'm sorry, you know, Acme Distributing is spec'd in, and we have a contract, and we got to buy from them, and I'm sorry, you know, and we're just keeping them honest, and, you know, hopefully the next time around we can do business, but we love dealing with you, and, you know, sorry, and of course, obviously, in a way, it's kind of hollow in the sense that I don't get to cash that check, but I do at least get to understand that I'm doing something right, and these people are always happy to see me in any respect, right? And so it's not like they're gonna say, oh god, like, oh man, remember the last time we said no to that guy? It was a nightmare. He called us 80, you know. Yeah. And you just don't want to be that guy, right? And so it serves me well. And so yeah,
no, I couldn't agree more. And I think it's such a critical part to, like you say, people buy from people, right? And they still buy and engage in that way.
Yeah.
But before we get on and talk about the book and some of the other great resources that you've got, what are sort of the top, you know, the teams that you work with and engage with and mentor and support, what are sort of some of the top two or three common mistakes that you see people make that, you know, if you could wave a magic wand across all the salespeople, you know, across the world right now, you would fix for them?
Yeah. So, well, yeah. So again, I mean, I don't want to be repetitive, right? But the number one thing, I guess, would be, you know, don't do anything remotely that you can do face to face. Right. And, yeah. So, you know, that's definitely one. I've alluded to some of these things as well, right? Like, so when, like, the one thing is, a lot of times people, like, I sell products that I need to show to customers, right? We sell, you know, it's either products that are up on cell phone towers, antennas, radios, all kinds of things, but they have to be trialed, right? But I always explain to people, always give the trial for half the amount of time you know the customer needs it for. Right. Like, yeah. Make yourself seem valuable and show your value, you know, your innate value, obviously, to people. Right. Like, in other words, you know, don't blather on through, you know, 90 PowerPoint slides to get to the meat of the why your product is good. Start off and show them why it's great right from the start and make them want it from the, you know, have them frothing at the mouth to try your product or whatever from the second you started your presentation, right? And because, you know, when people are attracted, attraction is not a choice, right? And so when you are naturally attractive, people are attracted to you. Same with your products. So you need to show them in their most attractive light so that the customers, you don't need to, like, brag about it, right? Oh, we've got, like, this huge memory. We got the fastest processor on the market and the best screen resolution. And, you know, people really don't want to hear you brag that way, right? What you want to do is say, you know, I mean, I'm just making this up off the top of my head, right? But imagine, you know, you got your box and their box and you put your box 20 away and go, hey, Bob, turn the screen on, right? You know, the guy could see the resolution from 20 feet away. So you go, that's resolution, right? Or, you know, something like that. And the guy's like, holy smokes, that is incredible. I've never seen a screen like that before. And then the rest of it just becomes him justifying all the reasons why he wants to buy your product, right? And
it's creating that wow factor, right? It's creating that wow, that amazing thing. Yeah. You know, I always say people buy with their heart as much as their head. And it's like, oh, goodness me, it's that element of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's talk about the book and some of the other resources you've got, because there's a fantastic pitch outline that I wanted to talk about as well, but never seen the lobby. So talk to us about what you know, obviously the book is a lot about lessons and you know, key rules and factors that you've used to, you know, sort of, you know, growing up in sales. Talk to people about the title, because obviously you mentioned at the start that it was linked to the book, from mentors, but what made you write the book?
So I started writing the rules down in the 80s, learning from my mentors, and I had a leather-bound notebook that I stored all these in. And after a while, I started repeating them, and then I started, and people would laugh when I would tell them, and I started naming them after people later. So I, you know, the Tony factor and the Brian factor and things like that kind of thing, right? And then it got to the point where I would tell these stories or whatever, and like other people that did sales, they're like, you know what? I'd love to have you at my sales meeting to share some of these stories, right? And so I went and did a little bit of public speaking, and of course, and then some people are like, oh, you should write a book or whatever. I'm like, yeah, but I mean, I was, you know, young guy in my mid 20s, early 30s, whatever, right? I kept writing down the rules, but I never buckled down to really, you know, take a serious stab at the book or whatever, right? But I had the same leather-bound notebook for years and years, and I always kept it with me, and I always wrote down basically my rules, write down the punchline, right? And the joke will, you know, you'll figure out the rest of the joke, right? And so I would keep track of these. And then when the pandemic hit, I had this like epiphany where I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't make any sales calls. I was locked up for a year. And I thought, what better time to write the book? And so, you know, I dedicated the mornings on the weekends until I had it finished, right? And so that was what, I've been recording all these rules and you know, telling them and sharing them with people liberally to make them laugh and to teach them a lesson and, you know, and share my knowledge over the years. But then, you know, then when the pandemic came, that was when I decided to get serious and write the book. And the title, my title was much more boring than that. I can't remember what it was, but it was like Sales Factors, you know what I mean? Or something like that, because I used to call it the Brian Factor and the editor was like, that's not going to work. Like you need something better. And so one of the editors actually, came up with the never sit in the lobby, right? And I'm thinking, oh yeah, it's one of my rules, right? Never sit in the lobby. It's very early on in the book, and I never sit in the lobby. And like,
so explain that one, just so people can attend to the rules. Explain that one for us. So
when you go, like, and I've been calling since 85, right? I mean, you go and you show up in the lobby and you say, hi, it's Glenn, I want to see Bob or whatever. They're like, okay, have a seat, right? You go and sit down, and then you start getting preoccupied. And nowadays it's even worse because you got your cell phone, right? And you're like on the phone, you're texting to the wife, oh, milk, cheese, bread, sure, no problem, honey, I'll get that stuff. And how's the dog? And whatever. And all of a sudden it's like some guy standing over top of you, towering up at you, and he's going like, are you Glenn? And you're like distracted and you're, you know, I'm like, no, when you get there on time, announce yourself and stand there, wait for the guy. Don't go read the plaques on the wall. Don't pick up a magazine. Don't sit down. Don't make phone calls and stay off your phone. Right. And be ready. Be standing in the lobby. Never sit in the lobby. Right. And so, and then that's why I say show up on time. So you're not there for 10 minutes standing around like getting sore feet. Right. And there's a bunch of other rules that wrap around the never sit in the lobby that happen at that very beginning of that sales, which are all, they just come one after another in the book. And, you know, I mean, of course, one is like, if you do show up early, sit in your car, not in the lobby, right? Until the appointed time. But while you're in the car, you basically go over another rule, which is called never forget a face, right? And so that, and now with phones and laptops, it's much easier than in the day when I had a call book. But you know, and what you do is you go to your CRM for that customer, like Honeywell or whatever, and you're waiting to go in Honeywell and you know a bunch of people there, right? You go through every name and you remap their face to their name. Like you remember, like, oh, Sally, that's the redhead, you know, Jack, that's the tall guy, Bob's the bald guy, whatever. And you instantly, you bring the distance of your memory from your back of your memory to your front. Because there's other rules where that'll be come into play later in the book, right? And so, but you re-remember their face because you will not remember their face in real time when you bump into them and they're like, oh, Glenn, good to see you. And you're like, Sally. You know? Yeah. And it's really embarrassing, right? And you want to take that minute back in life, but you can't. And Sally's like, he forgot my name. Like, you know.
Such a good point. And also it goes back to the element around that first impression, right? Because if you're standing up there and ready to meet someone, you're prepared, you're exactly. Showing that you're focused when you can remember, oh, hi, Sally, how are you? Especially if you know, I talk to people a lot about, you know, just remembering the small details, right? You know, yes. I saw that you won an award last week or congratulations on the recent deal.
Exactly.
Or
that's right.
It just makes people feel like, wow, you remember.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. And it's what's worse is they feel really good when you remember them. It's but how they feel when you don't remember them, right? And you can't take that away. You can't say sorry for that, right? And, you know, and so, you know, another one is you never sit in the lobby. You're in the lobby, you know, the guy comes, right? I have this little thing I call always ask for a mini tour, right? And people are like, well, what's a mini tour? And I go, it's a tour that's mini. Like, it's just a quick tour. Like, so let's say, you know, because it depends on what you sell, right? Like, And but basically what you do is you want to get behind the iron curtain and you want to see what's behind the wall, right? And you want to see your competitors. You want to see what t-shirts people are wearing, whose coffee mugs are on everyone's desk, you know, depending, you know. And like, I mean, like I said, I sold engineering solutions and equipment and things. So I wanted to get to the lab. I wanted to get to the production line. I wanted to get to the testing facility or whatever. And I say, hey, I know you're building a new lab. Can I, you know, can I have a quick look around? And then when sometimes when they get a little sketchy or whatever, then, you know, then I say, oh, don't worry, I won't sell any encyclopedias while I'm here, right? And you know, and then they'll typically laugh. They'll say, okay, fine, I'll give you a quick tour, right? And then you're walking down the hall. That's when you run into Bob and Sally and Jack, and they're like, oh my god, this guy knows everybody, right?
And also little things like, you know, you might walk past the big office and go, oh, who's that? That's Tina. Tell me a bit, well, who's Tina? What's Tina's role? Oh, she's the GM. Oh,
exactly.
Cool. And it gets you to open up conversations with people.
Yeah, and you can see things. And of course, you know, you don't want to interrupt the flow of what you're doing at that moment, but you're taking mental notes about, oh, I didn't realize they were buying, you know, the whatever solutions from Acme for this or that or whatever. And you're making mental notes, like follow up later with whoever about the fact that they're buying those things, because we also sell those things. Right. But you don't want to be like, oh, we sell that stuff too. Like, you know, let's stop here. And, you know, like you want to do that later. But that's when I would say, like, let's say maybe I knew someone in that section, but I didn't know that they were buying that stuff. On the way back, I'd say, hey, can you just stop by, take me by Bob's desk for a minute so I can just drop off a card. I wanted to, because I, you know, and then say, hey, good to see you, Bob. You know, I'm sure you're busy today, but I'm back next week, you know, on Tuesday. Could I get a few minutes on your calendar? And usually they're like, yeah, sure, no problem. And then all of a sudden I've got an appointment with Bob. And of course, then I'm, you know, I'm seeing what else I can do there that day. And, you know, and now I'm filling up my next Tuesday. Right. And,
no, I love it. I love the approach. And what's your view? And I mean, one of the things that people that got to sell face to face, I always talk to people around, or, you know, sort of bringing something in sometimes. I'd be in the habit sometimes of, you know, especially when I'm going into a building with, I might bring in a box of Krispy Kremes or some sweets for the team or whatever else. It just because it's those little things that make a difference, don't they?
One of the golden rules in my book, it's right in the very first few chapters, is always show up with something in your hand and something on your mind, right? And so, you always want to bring, but we have a rule, right, where we don't bring donuts past 10:30, because then you just spoil the guy's lunch and he gets mad at you, right? So you bring donuts first thing, right? But always have, you know, bring like a giveaway where you're giving away pens or mouse pads or water bottles or notepads or whatever you're giving away. Have something like that. Or maybe it's the quote or the literature. You always have something in your hand. And have something in your mind as well, right? And so, yeah, we're always bringing donuts. And, you know, but I have to train some of my people. I'm like, don't bring donuts at 2 p.m. Nobody wants freaking donuts at 2:00. Like, you know, it's just not appropriate. And you're just wasting our money. And they just sit there. And they really don't, you know, they're kind of almost negative in a way. So everything has to be appropriate, right? So if you want to do the donuts, we do it early, right? And
it's a great thing. But it's so, like you say, it's doing the, you know, that we talked about, it's doing the right thing at the right exactly. thing at the right time.
Yeah.
And if you're not careful, you know, I always talk to people about sales. You know, sales is simple. It's the actions you take and how you take the action. And if you take the wrong action at the wrong time and you do then you can go backwards rather than forwards.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
look, the book is obviously, you know, it's available on Amazon. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Sure.
And what I might even do is anyone that downloads, puts a comment into the podcast, we'll send them a copy of the book itself. And the reaction has been really positive. I saw on Amazon there's some great reviews and people are loving the rules basically and starting to use them in the day-to-day work, which must give you a huge amount of pleasure to know that the experience and wisdom that you've gained is now affecting day-to-day people that you don't know.
Well, yeah, and I hear some of the, you know, I mean, now I'll overhear people in the building and now that we're part of a much bigger company and I'm, you know, I'll hear people in other offices like in Dallas or in North Carolina or whatever, and I'll hear them like repeating a rule that they've heard or read in the book and whatever, and they're, oh, just do what Glenn said, you know, show up with something in your hand, something in your mind, or, you know, never forget a face, you know, and never fax the facts, never ship the shit, you know, and so I love seeing that sort of stick and you know, and so much of it's got like you know, I love telling the stories in a way that are funny and memorable, right? And
That story is great. That's what I was going to ask you. You know, can you remember your most memorable ever sales deal, or your most special deal that sticks to your mind that you thought, you know, was just one that was, you were just so proud of that
yeah,
you made it feel incredible?
Yep. Yeah. So there was the one that started off bad and got good, which was, and the rules in the book, you can read about it or whatever, where we quickly realized when we were there that we weren't the A brand. We were the B brand, and we were really the honesty keeper. You know what I mean? Like, get two quotes and, you know, that kind of a thing, or get three quotes. And I mean, but what the guy didn't realize was that, you know, he was buying the, you know, he was buying the high end unit for the engineering department. And, but we were there selling him one for the production department, and we actually had the better box, but he was too obtuse and to realize it or whatever. And I didn't do this, but my coworker did it. And I was doing the demo, and in the middle of the demo, my coworker said, you know what? We're not selling this product to this guy. And he literally grabbed the power cord. I don't recommend this as a sales technique, but he grabbed the power cord, ripped it out of the wall, and said, let's pack it up. We're on our way. And the guy's like, what's going on? What's going on? He goes, I'm sorry, sir, but you have no intention of buying the product. We, you know, you're being condescending. You're being distractionary. You're not listening. You don't care. You're clearly not buying this product, and we're not selling it to you. He's like, wait a minute. And so, and we ended up getting to the point where he felt bad about his behavior. And he said, look, let's start over, and da, 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 da. And he ended up buying like 8 units from us. And it was one of my biggest sales and at the time, right? And it was landmark. And I was early in my career or whatever. And I realized all the, you know, just, there's just so many subtle lessons in that story, right? And yeah.
And I was going to say, I love it for the fact that, you know, going back to what I said before about sales and subservience, sometimes you do need to stand up, right? And you need to, you know, I guess the lesson on that, I mean, like you say, maybe yeah, was doing that way, but you know, sometimes you're not a doormat. You're not a doormat to be walked over. You know, you're not a,
right?
You know, it's like in the negotiation phase, people want, you know, I say to people, if you want to negotiate me down and try and negotiate you down and make me, I'm not going to make money. I'm not going to be happy doing this work. Therefore, we're not going to do business together because it's not going to work for me. So it's that battle, isn't it, that people face. But I love the fact that someone stands up and stood up for themselves and said, no, I'm not doing this.
I'm not selling it to you. You can't buy it.
And actually, that probably makes that person, like you say, want them more because they were actually
they
want to be in that position. Yeah. So look, in terms of, you know, the things that you do now, how do you, you know, the other thing, I guess, the question is, yeah, we all know in sales and selling, we've got to stay ahead of the curve, and, you know, in order to make sure that the world that we love of selling and sales, you know, people stay ahead of that. Is there anything in particular that you, I guess there's 2 points to this question. Is there a book or obviously you've got your own podcast, or any people right now that you love in the sales world that you think share some great insights? And the second thing to that maybe is what's the biggest change that you see happening in the sales world right now that worries you?
Well, I'm not sure that it worries me. I mean, the biggest change that I see right now is how we can use AI to our advantage, and not as a crutch, but as a springboard and a lever to get more power in everything that we do. This continued sort of like remoting of the world, and everybody's expectation that it can all be done remote is the biggest threat I see. You know, because people think and want it all to be done remotely. Like, oh, well, can't you just send me an email? Can't you just, you know,
plus our personal touch.
They don't want to avoid the touch, and you know, they just want to avoid you, right? And we're not seeing customers in the building anymore, you know, so that to me is the biggest threat. And how do we get around that, right? And you know, we just use whatever trick we can. Like, you know, we'll hold the demonstration in a parking lot if we had to, or whatever, right? Or at a public place, or at a, you know, whatever. And but in AI, I mean, I use AI for everything in terms of, you know, anything creative that we do. And whenever I have to come up with answers or whatever, I always ask AI to give me, have I thought about everything? Like, what are all the points I need to think about when responding to this question, right? And then you take those points and then you embellish on them, right? And it's then you end up getting a more comprehensive And so, you know, those tools, you know, like Copilot and ChatGPT and things like that are so powerful in preparing comprehensive responses to customers. But I would caution people from cutting and pasting, right? It's a lever that's used to, you know, but it still requires your arm to push on it, right? You want to take it and adapt it and make sure that it's, you know, and, you know, that otherwise, it will end up becoming through as being disingenuous or something.
Quite. And there's a phrase that I've heard about AI at the moment, which is like, use it as a sous chef, not the executive chef, right? Yes. It's the preparation. Yeah. It's sort of like you want to get someone to prep the vegetables for you, but you don't want them to cook everything.
That's right. Exactly. That's a great analogy. Yeah.
So look, one thing before we finish, which is, I know time is precious and you've got your mentor or an old mentor coming around, but I want to talk also about, because I printed off your pitch document, which is your punch perfect pitch and close. I love that. And give everyone this, the five elements that because I think that's a really great snippet that we can give people straight away, that just on pitching, that is just a fantastic. When I was reading through it, I was like, I love this, especially the first one around that pattern interrupt. Just talk people through that outline and how, you know, what do people get badly wrong with the pitches, and what can they, you know, what can they learn from this that can work well for it?
Right. So the most important part about this, so it's the punch perfect pitch and close, right? So I kind of love the way it rolls off the tongue, of course, as well. But the whole idea is that the first thing you want to do is you want to punch the customer to change their state, right? And so the best example I always give is make a loud noise, play some music, or nowadays the best thing you can do is have an appropriate video that's short in length, but emotionally driven, that will drive emotion from the customer, that shows them experiencing the results you know they want for why they've invited you there today, right? And so, you make printing presses, show a video of the printing press spewing out papers 1,000 times faster than the competitor, right? And have the right emotional music being driven by it. But so they're witnessing like, oh my God, I've never seen anything work so quick or whatever. And I mean,
given that wow factor, right? That punch, that, like you say, it's not a literal punch. It's an impact, isn't it?
It's a state change, right? Because what most people do, which I hate, is, and I'm always giving my people crap for it, is they start with like, well, let me go over the company history. You know, we started in 1930 and we've got a factory in Atsugi, Japan with 1,200 people. And now we've got a place in Sweden. Nobody cares. Like, we're already bored. Get out. Right. And so, you know, you want to punch them, show them enjoying the product in its right. And then you want to have what I call the perfect pitch, right? Which is basically, you know, that's where I use the Goldilocks principle, right? The power of three, where first you tell them what you're going to tell them, then tell them what you told them. And then the whole telling of them is in threes, never, not two, not four. If two is not enough, four is too many. And you want to break it down into three manageable chunks, showing them and addressing what their real ultimate concerns are. Remember, most people are like, they want to give, you know, the whole cook's tour of the business instead of just like focusing it right down in on the exact minute thing that they care about, right? You know, and, you know, like if you're selling ball bearings and, you know, but you also make all the sort of steel rods and rebar and whatever, nobody cares. Like, we don't want to hear about any of that. Just show them a video of the ball bearings doing their job, you know, and then go and say, look, these are the reasons why I'm going to show you the reasons why our ball bearings are the best in the world. Bing, bing, bing. Give them the three things. Tell them what you told them. And at the end, the close is basically, you know, them asking how to buy it. That's when you know you did the right job. And of course, there's probably not enough time to go through the whole thing, and you can download it for free on my website, right?
Oh, I know. I'm going to encourage people to download it, which is it's a fantastic way of presenting and taking people to it. And I think what you talked about there, which is that element of the trinity. I love that part. Right? And actually, what's the tangible results? Because I was talking about the phases of selling, right? And you know, I had someone coming to me while I was selling a product a few years ago, and he said, you know, I use the phrase, it's not a great phrase, but he said, you salespeople can't try and come in here and try and ship miracles. And I was, you know, it made me laugh, right? He was like, you know, it was a bit of a weird phrase, but the phrase was like, yeah, but actually it's like, bring it to life, show them the evidence, show them that how this can happen and make it. And it's something that they can believe. And if you give them that belief, wow, this can come to life. These guys can deliver on what they say they will, then good things happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So look, we've come to the end of the podcast, and it's been fantastic to share. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your knowledge and so many, you know, we could talk all day around sort of stuff that you've done in your career. Two things before we finish. Any final advice for anyone that's feeling nervous or worried about sales or selling? Anything that you would sort of say to them as a veteran of sales, just to have in the, you know, in their mind when they're thinking around those nerves or concerns?
I mean, the best thing is to know your product, right? And then when you know your product, you can be confident about it. Don't sell anything that you don't love, right? When you love the product, it's easy to be passionate about it. Know what you're talking about. You don't need to know it all. You only need to know an appropriate level, right? And I talk about greed-based learning in the book, which, you know, it's a long chapter, so I won't go into it now, but it talks about the dynamics of making money off of knowing your product and knowing only enough to make the money, right? And, you know, and I mean, my golden rule that I always want to end with, you know, is you only get forever to make another impression, right? So when you're building a career in business and in sales, remember that every impression is like that first impression that your mother taught you about, right? That one's important, but so are every other one, right? So when the boss is walking by, don't be on Facebook, don't be on Instagram monkeying around, right? Stop the boss and say, boss, look, I'm working on this major deal. I'd love to pick your brain on something, right? If the guy's too busy, he'll say he's too busy or whatever. But every time this guy walks by you, you're at working at 110%. And when it comes to like him needing to pluck a guy out of the ether for some specific thing, you're going to be the first guy that he thinks of. When you're at a trade show, don't be sitting down complaining that your feet are sore. Be in the aisle, grabbing customers, pulling them in. If there's no customers, meet the product managers and the vice presidents and say, what makes your product line so good? Why, you know, why should I be worrying about your division versus your division? What makes you so good? And never, you know, you're always making an impression, and you want them to say, man, that guy Glenn at trade shows, he's insane. He's an animal. Like, I wish we had more of him, right? That's what you want. And that's how you end up leapscotching your competitors internally and externally, is by approaching it in that sort of an attitude, right?
I love it. And that sort of backs, again, you know, very similar alignment to what we're doing. It's that ethic, right? You know, that ethic of you've got to just, you know, you don't get anything. I'm a big believer. You don't get anything without hard work. You've got to put the effort in. You've got to do the grind. You've got to, you know, I say you don't get the six-pack without, you're going to get the sit-ups. With the six-pack without doing the sit-ups, right?
And or so you need the diet, too.
well, I don't know what that looks like, but
me either.
Help me if the case, but look, it's been great to chat to you, and I really appreciate it. Where can people reach you, Glenn? Obviously, they've got the book, which is Never Sit in the Lobby. Yeah. We're going to give a copy away of the book. So if you do put a box in the section below, reach out to us, and we'll reach out. We'll put a form in there which you can, if you can become the first person to do that, we'll give a copy. There's some fantastic resources that Glenn's got on your website. So where can people reach out to you?
Go to that website, glennpoulos.com, but most people connect with me on LinkedIn, and it's just LinkedIn/Glenn Poulos, and connect with me there. And I'm always talking to people. You'll see that I'm very engaged and active on LinkedIn. And or you can contact me through the website as well. But those are the two best ways. And I'm always happy to collaborate and chat with people about sales and selling and business. And, you know,
it's something you love, and it's like me. It's one of the things we'll go to our boxes with us being proud to be salespeople and loving the whole idea of what sales is and the impact we can make. So look, Glenn, thank you so much for your time this evening afternoon for me and for you. And look, I'm gonna, as I say, we'll share the podcast, and we'll get people to reach out to you and get people to get a copy of Never Sit in the Lobby, and also Glenn Bunch Perfect and Pitch and Close. And look, some great insights and wisdom that you shared, especially for anyone that's selling products. You know, you've identified that the best way to do it is to get it in their hands and to get them to feel it and to see it, right, rather than necessarily to imagine it. But that plus the hard work is going to get them the great results they want. So look, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. And as I say, we'll have people who've enjoyed and hope you have enjoyed. If you've enjoyed listening to Glenn, please share the episode with other people. If there's other people similar to Glenn that you'd love me to get on the podcast, then let us know as well. But that's it for another edition of the Diary of a Sales Expert podcast. Thanks for watching and for listening. And if you have any questions around sales, anytime, reach out to myself or Glenn. We're always happy to support and help you in anything you do. But until next week, have a great rest of the week and take care.
So thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed. If you have, please subscribe to the podcast. It helps us ensure more people can get the insights and ideas they need to get incredible sales results. Look forward to seeing you on the next episode.